Good evening and welcome to Africa News Tonight from the English to Africa service of the Voice of America. I'm Kim Lewis in Washington.
And I'm Yehi Suhib, and coming up this hour on Africa News Tonight.
There's been severe damage all along the coast of Gulf of Aden, particularly in Shebwa and Hadramaut governorates. About 40,000 people displaced and some 450 homes damaged or destroyed. And on top of that, many people have lost their livelihood and lost all of their worldly belongings.
That's Teddy Lipowski of the UN Refugee Agency describing humanitarian conditions in Yemen following yesterday's cyclone. Details coming up.
Also, an affiliate of the Islamic State in Egypt has claimed responsibility for the deaths of six people in a car bombing on the Sinai Peninsula. And a cargo plane crashes on the muddy banks of the Nile River in South Sudan, killing at least 25 crew and passengers.
We'll have these stories and lots more ahead on Africa News Tonight.
Our top story this hour, the UN Children's Fund sees no sign that migrant flows into Europe are slowing down. UNICEF says the number of refugees making the perilous journey across the Mediterranean Sea is increasing despite the worsening weather conditions. Lisa Schlein reports from Geneva.
The UNICEF Refugee and Migrant Crisis Chief in Europe, Marie-Pierre Poirier, has just returned from a week-long mission tracking the migrant flow along the so-called Balkan route. She followed the migrants as they moved from the former Yugoslav Republic of Macedonia at the border with Greece to Serbia and Croatia. She describes the journey as utterly exhausting and fearful, especially for the children. She says people along the route told her they were risking their lives in choppy seas to come to Europe because the prices had gone down.
It looked like smugglers, because of rough weather and possible more difficulties, are giving a discount to anybody, so to keep the numbers up.
Prices reportedly have gone down from a high of $5,000 to a little over $1,000 for a family. As a consequence of these bargain rates, the migrant flows into Europe appear to be unstoppable, at least for now. Macedonian authorities say the number of people they have registered in October is double that of September. Poirier adds there also has been an increase in the proportion of women and children among the population on the move.
We were talking of one-third. The data for October, as registered by the authorities in Gevgelia, is 44%. In September, it was 36%. We are also tracking the number of children. In June, if we go back, 1 of 10 of the people registered was a child. The data for October is 1 in 3.
Poirier calls this a crisis for children. She notes 190,000 children, that is 700 children every day, have sought asylum in Europe so far this year. She says there are signs possible new routes to Europe are emerging. She says an increasing number of people in Turkey are not going across the water. Instead, they are going through Istanbul on the land road to Bulgaria. But she warns migrants are unlikely to receive a warm welcome there. She says migrants reportedly are being put in detention and the Bulgarian police are taking a harsh position. Lisa Schlein for VOA News, Geneva.
German federal police have arrested smuggling suspects who are flying migrants into Germany by plane and sending them by boat to England. More than 600 officers recently conducted a sweep of 24 residences in three states and arrested 17 smuggling suspects. French authorities conducted similar raids and took into custody 8 suspects who have been smuggling migrants to Britain by rubber boats from the coastal city of Dunkirk. French Interior Minister Bernard Cazeneuve says his government has dismantled about 200 networks and detained more than 300,000 people suspected of conducting human trafficking networks. Meanwhile, helicopters today pulled 26 migrants from a boat that was sinking in rough seas off the coast of Cyprus. The Mediterranean rescue was conducted last night and saved the lives of all on board. Many were suffering from hypothermia. The migrants said they were from Lebanon and were trying to reach the Greek coastline. Greece is the principal entry point for more than 600,000 migrants seeking asylum in Europe this year.
Unprecedented numbers of migrants from sub-Saharan Africa say they are stranded on Africa's Mediterranean coastal countries of Algeria, Morocco, and Libya. The International Organization for Migration, IOM, acknowledges the plight of these migrants is not a new crisis. For those in Libya, they say most left their home countries to work there because jobs were plentiful. For others, IOM says the route westward to Spain has been a heavily traveled one for decades. Now hundreds of thousands of migrants say they are stranded in these countries, living in abandoned buildings, begging for money to complete their journey to Europe. IOM spokesperson Ataye Variri says those migrants stranded in Morocco have a different set of circumstances from those in Libya.
Well, the particular numbers that we're talking of in Libya, these are people who were there even before Gaddafi was toppled. As you know, before Gaddafi was removed from power, there was a significant number of, I would say, several hundred thousand of sub-Saharan Africans who made their living in Libya because, you know, there was a lot of work in the oil sector and a lot of construction that was going on. And to the effect that, in fact, when the conflict began and the International Organization for Migration was one of the agencies that actually repatriated several thousands of sub-Saharan Africans who wanted to go home, you know, to places like Cameroon, Chad, and quite a few countries in West Africa. So the numbers are not just new arrivals, but people who have been there for a long time, who now find that the situation in Libya is quite untenable. Security-wise, it's very dangerous for them. And the option that they're taking now is to try and continue on to Europe instead of maybe going back to their countries of origin.
Now, these are people that also applies to Morocco as well?
Indeed, yes. Yes. The same conditions that I just referred to in terms of access to employment would prevail in quite a number of North African countries. But until now, in places like Libya, they'd be happy to stay there and not consider going on to Europe. Morocco is slightly different in that it's obviously certainly more at peace for people who are waiting to go to Europe.
Those migrants that are in Morocco that are from sub-Saharan Africa, they say that they're invisible, that they're just being ignored and they're pretty much stuck there. They can't get home, they can't get to Europe, and they can't get employment there. So what will the country do about that?
The IOM has a program that can assist people voluntarily do so. But I presume in this case, if they want to go to Europe, because Morocco is not in the same situation as Libya, that there's a governing authority, you know, they're probably not allowing them to get onto boats the same way that is happening in Libya, where there's no real government in place or a real authority that can stop them getting onto boats. So I think that's the main difference. But I'd also say that in many cases, the dynamics are very different, and therefore you have a situation that maybe they might feel that they're ignored because if everyone focuses on Libya, the fact that the authority there is not stopping people trying to get onto the boats and trying to get to Europe.
So what does the future hold then for those migrants who they say they're stranded in Morocco?
One thing definitely that we can, as the International Organization for Migration, say is that if they are really, you know, desperately need to go back home, the IOM does provide a service where they get support to go back. And also in many cases, they get reintegration support. Our office in Rabat should be able to assist them with that. And we experience across many countries where we can certainly, over a period of time, assist large numbers to return. As I said, we did that in Libya, where several thousand sub-Saharan Africans were assisted to return home. But if they want to continue on to Europe, we don't have a facility to help them do that. But the main thing is that we can certainly help them make right choices, and we give them the information on what they need to do. And then it's up to them to decide whether they want to go back home or they want to continue on to Europe.
That was IOM spokesperson Ataye Variri. He spoke with me while traveling through Europe.
As the European migrant and refugee crisis continues, there's also a humanitarian crisis in Yemen. Cyclone Chapala made landfall yesterday, disrupting humanitarian operations in a country torn by conflict since March. The UN Refugee Agency, UNHCR, says migrants and refugees are both fleeing and arriving in the country at the same time, and many others are in displacement camps. Teddy Leposki is a spokesman for the UN Refugee Agency and works on humanitarian operations in Yemen. Speaking from Amman, Jordan, he told VOA's Jody Capua about the impact of Cyclone Chapala.
There's been severe damage all along the coast of the Gulf of Aden, particularly in Shebwa and Hadhramaut governorates. About 40,000 people displaced, and some 450 homes damaged or destroyed. And on top of that, many people have lost their livelihood and lost all of their worldly belongings. So there's a desperate need for blankets, food, water, and hygiene materials.
Can you give me an idea of what the humanitarian operation was like prior to the cyclone?
Well, the operation has been focused on the humanitarian crisis as a result of the conflict since the escalation in late March of this year. I mean, in recent times, that has been focused around Taiz, central and northern Yemen, while also a lot of support has been focused on Aden in the south, where a lot of IDPs have begun to return home, but there's still a great level of displacement for Yemenis, but also for refugees and asylum seekers as well.
Now, what's surprising to me is that when the conflict broke out, we were hearing reports from UNHCR about thousands of people wanting to return to the African countries. But I see in a recent report that almost 70,000 refugees, asylum seekers, and migrants, primarily from Ethiopia and Somalia, still went to Yemen despite the conflict.
Yeah, indeed. I mean, the situation is similar to what we saw in 2011 as well, when there was an escalation in violence during political unrest. The authorities are not able to monitor the borders very well. Many refugees and migrants see this as an opportunity to sort of come in. They're fleeing violence and conflict in their homeland and poverty, lack of livelihood opportunities. So they sort of balance the risk and see this is still a viable option. Seems a bit desperate, but that is their situation, that they are still continuing to move. And one of the elements that we see is that in past years, most of the new arrivals were coming along the Red Sea coast. But with the intensity of the conflict in Taiz governorate along the Red Sea near Bab el-Manda, many of the new arrivals are now traveling through Somalia from Bisaso and that area off onto the Gulf of Aden.
What is the difference between the two routes? Is one more dangerous than the other?
Well, one is shorter. I mean, the travel from Obok in Djibouti is a matter of a couple of hours, whereas the travel from Bisaso in Somalia can take up to about 2 days. And also for some, it's a bit more expensive as well for Ethiopians that are having to travel a further distance by land to ultimately get to that area.
This must be a very complicated humanitarian operation. You have people coming and going and those who are staying. So give me an idea of the scope of what you have to do to deal with this situation.
Well, right now we have some 2.3 million internally displaced persons in Yemen. On top of that, about 272,000 refugees and asylum seekers. And now with this natural disaster along the Gulf of Aden coast, there could be as many as 1.1 million people that are affected. And with the ongoing conflict, the services and infrastructure have been severely strained and in some cases have just collapsed. The ability for us to get the humanitarian aid through, we face a great deal of challenges in terms of access and also, you know, with the economic situation, the lack of fuel, of necessary items within the market. It's a very big struggle for partners, for Yemenis, and also for the humanitarian community to respond.
Of course, much attention is being given to Europe as the migrants come from Turkey through Greece into Europe and, of course, across the Mediterranean from Libya and other countries in North Africa. Is there enough money for the UNHCR to carry out all these operations?
Globally, that would be hard for me to really reflect upon. For our operation, we do need more support. That is very much the case. We do have a lot of support coming right now from a number of donors, ECHO, KSRC, and Japan, just to name a few. But with this natural disaster, with the cyclone that has just come, and again with the ongoing conflict and what it has done to coping mechanisms within Yemen, a very difficult environment, and unfortunately, I mean, the conflict has continued unabated. We're hopeful of the talks that are due to begin sometime in mid-November, but recovering from this current situation, assuming it doesn't get worse, and it's hard to imagine that, especially with what has happened in the last few days with the cyclone, it's going to take a long time for Yemen to recover.
Teddy Lipowski is a spokesman for the UN Refugee Agency from Amman, Jordan. He spoke to VOA's Jody Kapawa.
You're listening to Africa News Tonight live on the following frequencies, 15, 580 and 6080 kilohertz on the Voice of America. I'm Kim Lewis in Washington.
I'm Yehi Suhib, 20 past the hour. Here's a recap of our top stories. German federal police have arrested smuggling suspects who are flying migrants into Germany by plane and sending them by boat to England. And the European migrant and refugee crisis continues. As it continues, there is also a humanitarian crisis in Yemen. And we'd like to hear your thoughts on our stories. You can write to us at Africa News Tonight, Voice of America, 330 Independence Avenue, Southwest Washington, D.C., 20237.
Reuters news agency says an affiliate of the Islamic State in Egypt has claimed responsibility for the deaths of six people in a car bombing on the Sinai Peninsula. The bomb exploded today at a policeman's club in El Arish, a town on the Sinai Peninsula, 50 kilometers from the Gaza Strip crossing. Terrorists calling themselves the Sinai Province affiliate of the Islamic State in Iraq have killed hundreds of soldiers and police patrolling the peninsula. The attacks accelerated after Egypt's Supreme Council of Armed Forces ousted and arrested President Mohamed Morsi, a leader of the Muslim Brotherhood, after 1 year in office.
The World Health Organization says at least 109 people have died from viral hemorrhagic fever in Darfur. Health officials in Sudan say West Darfur is the most affected state with at least 60% of the fatalities. As INBORA reports, WHO officials have partnered with Sudan's Ministry of Health to contain the outbreak and prevent new infections.
The WHO says mosquitoes are to blame for the viral hemorrhagic fever, or VHF, that has taken 109 lives in Darfur and has infected at least 224 people. Officials are testing patient samples to get a better understanding of the cause of the outbreak. Dr. Naima Al-Ghafir, the Sudan country representative for WHO, says the cause of death in cases she has seen is dengue fever and malaria, both illnesses that are carried by mosquitoes.
So immediately, the response was to start spraying indoor and outdoor because dengue is due to mosquitoes during the day and malaria usually in the late evening. So it was an integrated approach how to immediately spray the houses and also around environments to keep cleaner.
Dr. Al-Ghafir says rapid response teams were also sent to the affected areas to educate the population about seeking medical treatment as soon as they experience fevers, headaches, or joint pain, all symptoms of VHF. Another doctor with the international community, not authorized to speak to reporters, says in years past, communities in Darfur were provided with mosquito nets, but that didn't happen this year. He says it could be one reason why the region has seen a spike in the viral hemorrhagic fever. Dr. Al-Ghafir says their measures are working. She says they have seen only 24 new cases and 5 deaths since October 29th. She says one reason they are seeing a decline is the containment measures that have been enacted.
The other is that case detection, people detected for the symptoms are higher. Third, more importantly, populations are actually, families are taking more care, and the minute they find the symptoms, they go and seek care.
Dr. Al-Ghafir says the fatalities could be less than 1% if people follow the response plan. She urges people to use mosquito nets to cover standing water and to go to the doctor if there is any suspicion of the disease. She says these simple steps could save many lives, not just in Darfur, but in the surrounding areas.
Viruses and bacteria, diseases outspread, does not know the border, does not know the politics, does not know the geography.
Dr. Al-Ghafir says WHO sent a special team during the early stages of the outbreak to investigate in case the infections were caused by Ebola, which began in Guinea and spread to other West African countries last year. She says they have since ruled out Ebola because there is no evidence of human-to-human infections. And more importantly, there are no cases among health workers, one of the critical characteristics in the Ebola outbreak. For VOA News, I'm Ian Bior in Washington.
A cargo plane crashed today on the muddy banks of the Nile River in South Sudan, killing at least 25 crew and passengers. There are unconfirmed reports that the only survivors of the crash were a member of the crew and a small child. AP reports that the plane's passenger capacity was limited to 12 people and cargo. The pilot was attempting a takeoff from the international airport in Juba, the capital of South Sudan. He apparently avoided a busy market as the plane crashed in the middle of a plot of uninhabited farmland. The Russian-made 44-year-old Antonov aircraft was bound for the Palohich oil fields of Upper Nile State. The owner or operator of the aircraft was not reported.
A court in Zimbabwe has granted bail to three journalists arrested for publishing a story that linked senior police officers to a massive elephant poaching syndicate. Sebastian Mamfu reports from Harare.
Despite a three-hour argument from state prosecutors, Majesty Tendai Mawe ordered the release Wednesday of the three journalists on $100 bail each. Foster Dongozi of the Zimbabwe Union of Journalists says the three never should have been arrested at all.
Instead of seeking guidance and assistance from the journalists, we get surprised and extremely shocked and displeased at the same time when police descend into newsrooms and arrest journalists. We are expecting the police to be in the Wange National Park looking for the poachers and not in newsrooms looking to arrest journalists.
The three journalists from the state-owned Sunday Mail newspaper were arrested Monday for linking senior police officers to a poaching syndicate at Wange National Park, about 700 kilometers southwest of Harare. In recent months, about 80 elephants have died at Wange due to cyanide poisoning. Zimbabwe police spokeswoman Cherry Charamba said the three published court falsehoods, but Amnesty International said their detention was, quote, a shocking attempt to threaten freedom of the press, unquote, in Zimbabwe. The Southern African country has an estimated 100,000 elephants, but conservationists say poaching is starting to decimate the population. Demand for ivory from the elephant's tusk remains high in Asia despite an international ban on the ivory trade. Analysts also say poverty is pushing some Zimbabweans into illegal hunting. Sebastian Mofu for VOA News, Harare.
And that wraps up this edition of Africa News Tonight. Stay tuned for Straight Talk Africa with Shaka Sali, coming up at 18:30 UTC. I'm Yehi Suhib in Washington.
And I'm Kim Lewis. And for all the latest developments on the continent 24/7, visit our website at voaafrica.com. And on behalf of our Africa News Tonight producer, Bill Workinger, and our engineer, Tian Wang, thanks for choosing the Voice of America.
Next on Straight Talk Africa, we'll explore the secrets of doing business in Africa from an American corporate executive's perspective. Join host Shaka Sali and his guests as they share how U.S. companies can best play catch-up with the fastest-growing continent. That's next Wednesday at 18:30 UTC on VOA Africa.
When news is happening, VOA Africa is there.
Mohamed Yusuf of VOA News, Nairobi.
Victor Beatty, VOA News, Washington.
Lisa Schlein for VOA News, Geneva.
For VOA News, I am Charlton Doki in Joba.
Moki Edwin Kinzuka for VOA News, Yaoundé.
VOA correspondents take you right to the center of events as they're happening. And this is where you hear it all on VOA Africa.